You're listening to Extra Time Radio.
So, what are you guys going to do? Are you going to continue to be a bunch of soft, underperforming, tattooed millionaires?
They said all along, we're not, perfection is not possible. We just want to get the big decisions right.
What are we doing? What are we doing?
Green room getting hot.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, and try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
The right answer was a goal in Times Square so we could do butts up, but that wasn't easy.
That's why he's here!
Welcome to Extra Time Radio, driven by Continental and MLS Soccer.com. I'm David Goss, joined by Bobby Warshaw as we sit in here and we try and get our CCL fever to break. No chance of it. An incredible week of CCL action. We've got it all coming up to talk about. And then we've got Paul Tenorio in the second segment to talk MLS transfers and rumors, as well as some weekend preview. And Ben Baer in the mailbag. Bobby, how's your fever?
My fever's good, but I'm just excited that Daddy let us do this alone.
Yeah, Mr. Andrew Wiebe on daddy duty today. So he's taking care of the young one who has been pictured this week wearing a Minnesota United onesie after Francisco Calvo's comments, and a Club America onesie after one of our friends who's a Club America fan got very salty when TFC defeated Club America 3-1, and that is what you call a transition. Toronto FC 3-1 winners against Club America on Tuesday night at BMO Field. Bobby, this was a fun one again. The Tigres series was one of the best series I've seen. That first leg game was one of the best games we've watched on this continent in a while. This one was good as well, but it was cold, it was rainy, field cut up a little bit, and TFC comes out and they get the perfect start. Jovinko earns a PK and scores it in the first 10 minutes. You've got a 1-0 lead. This is what we talk about with MLS teams. Can they get on top? Can they take advantage? Can they manage big moments? Was it a PK though?
It was absolutely a PK. Just because the other team complains and makes a big thing out of it doesn't mean it wasn't a PK. Jovinko megged the defender. The defender did not make contact with the ball. He only made contact with Jovinko's legs. That is a penalty.
And when you say big thing, we're about to get into that. A huge thing Club America made out of that one. They proceeded to then score to close out the first half. And it looked like they were going to go in at 1-1. Club America scores. They get the away goal. All of a sudden, the air comes out of it, and then Josie Altidore steps up with a huge goal, perfectly taken by him. One touch to get around the defender. He goes wide, rips it into the back of the net. They take a 2-1 lead, and we enter the halftime locker room. They go up the tunnel at BMO Field, the tunnel. This is the famous tunnel. New York Red Bulls are probably sitting in Guadalajara watching this one on TV, thinking, yeah, we know the deal in that tunnel. And there was another kerfuffle. Is that what we'd like to call it this time?
Great word.
You like that one? A kerfuffle between these two teams as they're going up the tunnel. Bobby, let's start with this. We got to change this. You got to have a different entrance for away team and home team in this tunnel. This is where it all happened.
This is the way every tunnel in every stadium in the world works. Both teams walk through the same tunnel, and then they veer off to go to their locker rooms. But, David, this isn't about the tunnel. This is a statement about who TFC is. And I think it's a good thing. It's a credit to them. It's a credit that the emotions are so heightened, that they're playing in games that are so important, that they don't back down to anyone. I bet you there's a ton of times in Major League Soccer history when teams went in the tunnel and something happened and players backed off. But not TFC. They don't back down to anyone. This is the standard that they've set for themselves, for the league, and they deserve credit for this happening.
Do you think teams get panicky? You come into this series, and I look at the Tigres series for starters, and they don't start Gignac. And they don't start Valencia. And then he comes on at halftime. And it felt like that first 45, Tuca Ferretti was like, oh. And the players were like, oh, no, this is for real. This is what we're into. And Club America, it seemed like a similar situation where 45 minutes in, you realize, no, this team's really good. And there's a ton of pressure on.
You know, the other thing I want to go back to real quick, along with the tunnel and the whole atmosphere. Did you hear what Herrera said about before the game when the referees made the players change their underwear?
Yep.
Bobby Boswell tweeted this too, and I experienced it when I was in Champions League. They do that before every Champions League game, except you just know your sliders or your underwear have to match the color of your shorts. In the same way, if players cut their socks, you can't wear blue socks and have white undersocks that show. It's soccer rules everywhere, but CONCACAF is extremely strict about it. And if you have ever played a CONCACAF game, you've heard, watched refs check it, you've heard them. So for him to say this after the game was totally insane in him just playing the media and playing mind games.
And he did that throughout. Some interesting post-game comments from Piojo Herrera, the head coach of Club America, on MLSsoccer.com. His quote, he said, multiple America players were involved in a brawl, and the police hit them, including Marchesin, Bruno, and fitness coach Becerra, contended America expressive head coach Miguel Herrera via a translator after the game. In my opinion, if the police are going to be in the tunnel area, it should be to separate players, not to hit them. A CONCACAF staffer was present there and saw everything, so I hope they report it.
It feels like if there's anything you can trust in this world, it's that a Canadian police officer would not have hit somebody in a soccer stadium tunnel. If you can't trust that, if you can't trust a Canadian officer in a soccer stadium, I don't know what you can trust in this world.
I don't know if everyone would agree with you on that one, but this is, when you say he's making comments about underwear to get people's attention, this is next-level stuff. I mean, Calvo's complaining about coverage on MLSsoccer.com. We're talking about police presence right now in a stadium rather than talking about the game. This is next level. This is wild. Greg Vanney on the flip side said he didn't think that the police did anything wrong and what he could see, and he said he saw most of it. This was crazy stuff, and what was crazy about watching it from home was, one, Josie was in the back this time, didn't start it clearly, runs to the referee to tell him to get involved. So clearly he's learned his lesson from the playoffs last year. And then there was someone putting their hand on the camera to try it from stop.
That's the best part.
Filming it. We don't know who that person was. Some say it was Club America Associated. Some say it was CONCACAF. And the whole thing was entertainment. I mean, pure entertainment.
It was amazing. There's no other way to put it. It was fun. Thank you, CONCACAF. Thank you, Champions League, for giving this to us.
On the flip side, Greg Vanney said this. One of their coaches took exception to, I think, the PK, was having a go at Sebastian, and Sebastian kept walking. Vanney then said, Johnny, meaning Jonathan Osorio, stepped in between the assistant coach and Sebastian. I told the coach and the head coach that his coach shouldn't be talking to our players. He needs to keep moving. And the next thing was an elbow from said coach, the assistant coach who was talking, into Johnny's nose. And if you want to see Johnny's nose, you can take a picture of it if you want. And then it escalated from there.
You know what I love most about this story? Most teams, when you hear about this kind of kerfuffle, it's the star players or it's the big names or whatever. But for Toronto, it's Jonathan Osorio. It feels like it's always Drew Moore that's the one sticking up for players. It's these players that you think are usually just bit part guys on most teams. They're the ones stepping up, and they're the ones saying, no, 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 not on our turf.
If you're Jonathan Osorio, I mean, you know your role is to protect that guy, right? Your role is to protect him. Club America was upset with Jovinko the entire game. These two teams, that type of emotion, when you come out of the locker room, I mean, clearly TFC is experienced with this now after the playoffs last year. How does that affect these two teams? Because you walk into the locker room and you're not even thinking about the first half anymore. You're fired up and you're juiced up about what just happened.
You would generally calm down in those 5 minutes in a locker room. Usually the coach stays away for the first, you have 15 minutes off. Maybe it takes you 2 or 3 minutes to walk there. The coach only talks for 2 or 3 minutes near the end.
10 minutes at BMO.
True. But generally at halftime, you just sit there and you're in your locker room. You take off your jersey, you towel off. Maybe you get a fresh, dry jersey. But it's mostly just you relaxing. There's not a lot going on. There's not people yelling. There's not a coach talking. So you usually do have time to calm down in those 5 minutes.
So much frustration going on. They come out in the second half. And TFC, I think, played better in the second half than they did in the first half. Ashton Morgan gets the goal.
Ashton Morgan, the TFC OG.
The legend. He was wearing his Justin Morrow jersey because he was doing his best Justin Morrow impersonation. He cuts forward. He plays the initial ball across the field to open up play, and then he crashes in and gets the goal at the end. But once again, TFC, they play one of the two or three biggest teams in Mexican history and currently in Mexico, and they played their game. They looked the better team. I don't think they looked as good as they did against Tigres, just in general, the way they played defensively or in possession. They win 3-1 against Club America.
We're going to get to TFC, but tell the Ashton Morgan story that you told me off air about the parade last year.
Yeah, so last year, in celebrating Ashton Morgan, he led the Viking clap.
At their celebration after MLS Cup.
Yeah, at the Nathan Phillips Square 2 days after MLS Cup, which was a huge moment. Michael Bradley specifically asked Ashton Morgan to do it. He then, after they left, went behind the bus and broke down crying. And it was him and his dad off to the side. You could see how much it meant to him. He's a local guy. He grew up in this academy. This is a team that's very passionate, very close. Not a ton of them are originals. Jonathan Osorio, also you could see the emotion from him last year. But Ashton Morgan, it was cool to see because Raheem Edwards was the guy playing that role last year. So Morgan now, he was emotional last year, but to see him be involved and get a big moment like that was cool for me to see.
I can't imagine what he's been through. He was the star player at one point when they first started as an organization, the homegrown, and then he doesn't play for a few years, then they get that big moment. Most pros would look back and say, I don't know how you went from being important to not important, how you dealt with it, how you remained a good enough teammate. So it was really cool to see him get that moment.
And then this 3-1 win, is that enough? You give up an away goal, you win 3-1, you're going to Azteca at altitude in Mexico City.
We know how hard it is. I've heard this a million times.
Do you want
me
to keep listing?
No, I've heard this so many times. Is it enough? I'm not going to sit here and say, are they going to win or are they going to lose? But could it be enough? Yes. And it makes me – I think about this every time I'm on the show and I haven't fully stood up for them. We're always sitting here saying we're not sure they can do it. But how many times have we doubted Toronto FC in the last 2 years?
Yeah.
So many. And at some point, we just have to say, listen, they might go and lose to Club America, but it's not because Toronto FC wasn't good enough to beat them. It's not because Toronto FC couldn't go toe-to-toe. Sometimes two good teams, one just wins, but it's not going to be Toronto's fault.
I fully agree with you. It would seem like they need to score a goal in this away game to at least push Club America, because if Club America has that option to win 2-0 and go through, that makes it dangerous. It makes it tough. It's going to be a fun one here in the second leg.
I have a question to ask you about Toronto. So here I can use all the superlatives. I can say how great they are. My eyes can look at the standings. I can look at them play and say, dang, that team is phenomenal. At the same time, I could not write an article describing why Toronto is so phenomenal. I couldn't give you a checklist and say Toronto does A, B, and C well because they do C, D, and E. So it's a really weird thing where I can watch them and say they are really good and they deserve everything they get and also not be able to parse what makes them so good.
Because there's no definitive specific style that they play with? Is that why you're saying that?
Partially because there's no style, but partially, I mean, I'll put this to you. What are they really good at? Because let me give you like a checklist of five. Are they really good at pressing high? Not really. Are they really good at sitting deep in a low block and blocking angles? Not really. Are they really good at building out of the back? Not really. Are they really good at manipulating teams through possession? Not really. Which is, I know it sounds weird to say, they're good at all these things, but they're not, holy crap, that's the best team we've ever seen in this league good.
Yeah, they don't put their entire result on any one of those things, which some teams have done, which is a very boomer bust style. But they're good at all of those things, right? They're good at defending in a block when they have to, especially when they're playing five in the back, especially when they've got Delgado alongside Bradley. They're good in possession, and I think they're good at manipulating other teams in possession. I think they move the ball really cleanly. I think across the board, the thing that impresses me with them is they have the cleanest first touch and they know what they want to do with their second touch the most of any MLS team. And there are times in MLS and there's times in the world of soccer where the game dies on one or two players' feet and you're kind of hoping the sequence doesn't end on them. And I don't think that player exists in TFC. And that's what makes them A, deep, and B, so successful. And then they've got Josie and Giovinco, who are two of the best one-on-one players in Major League Soccer. Josie may not be known for that specifically, and he might do it in different ways, whether it's his physicality or his speed. He's also got great touch and a willingness to take guys on. But those two can take defenders or one player out of the play and give them numbers and give them opportunities. But you look at these goals, they open up channels because they move the ball so quickly. And so it lands at Delgado's foot, and he plays a simple ball through for Josie, but the defense hasn't recovered because Morgan, Osorio, and Delgado's first touches have been clean and quick, and the balls move faster than the defense. So that, in my mind, is what makes them good and what makes them fun to watch.
It's a good answer, and I just want to point out it's rare to see a team that's so good at passing and possession and breaking teams down with the ball on the ground. But you know what Toronto doesn't do? It is that they don't necessarily pass and move directly off that pass. A lot of the passing teams were in the Barcelona mold, whereas pass, get it back, and then you would move with a third runner, or you would, a lot of times, like you said, it's like get the ball and move it. There's not necessarily a 1-2. There's not necessarily a bump-bump combination with one touches. And I think it just says more about me than it does about Toronto that my brain, and I would love to hear from the ETR listeners, because I've searched the web for a blog on this or for an article, so I'd love to hear from you guys if you could explain, you know, articulate this.
I can guarantee you the second leg's going to be fun. It's going to be 10 p.m. Eastern time next Tuesday on Go90 and UDN. These teams already don't like each other. They're both fighting for a crown right now of being the best team in the region. They're two of the highest spenders in the region. Piojo, in Azteca has given us some of the best moments on the sideline that we've ever seen. This is going to be awesome to watch. And then the other series. Chivas gets a 1-0 win over New York Red Bulls on Wednesday night. Red Bulls go down. They start a bit more defensive. They make a mistake in the first half. You could put on Tyler Adams. You could put it on Luis Robles if you want
to. It's Tyler Adams.
You could put it on Tyler Adams. He gives away the ball. Chivas goes on a 2-on-1 break. Brizuela is able to finish past Robles to give Chivas a 1-0 lead. And I think from there on, Red Bulls controlled more of the possession. I don't think there was ever a time when Chivas dominated possession. Chivas didn't create a ton of chances. But let's start with the mistake, because the Red Bulls came in here and it kind of looked like they were trying to hold the fort and copy what they did against Tijuana, not concede, hope they get a chance on the other end, or expect at some point something will fall to them and hope they finish it. And then they give up the goal and you're worried it's going to take the air out of them, but it didn't. They seemed to fight back and be resilient.
I thought New York Red Bulls played well all game. That we have been texting back and forth, and there were points when we weren't sure if they were playing well, but as I went back and watched it again, I thought they played well. Front to back, yeah, they lost, but it was just a game that they lost, as we said earlier, that it was just two teams playing well and one team won. It wasn't about Red Bulls not stepping up.
Do you like the way they went in and took this game? A.K.A. Aurelien Collins starts in this one. So I wasn't sure
This makes you mad, and you were saying this, but...
Well, he didn't start in the first leg against Tijuana, and they shut out Cholos on the road. He comes back and starts in a five-man back line against Tijuana in the second leg, and they give up an own goal like 11 minutes in, or it was a goal, it should have been an own goal, whatever it was. It just seems to me that your best defense isn't with him, and if you can add an extra attacking player or midfielder and be better defensively, why wouldn't you do that?
I don't love the defend Aurelien Collins, but you can understand the flip side to that argument. You can understand why Jesse Marsh would want him to play, because when you're going to Mexico, and we always talk about how hard it is to play in Mexico, you want a fighter like Aurelien Collins in your squad. You can understand that part of it.
I can understand that, and I won't say that he doesn't, that there aren't moments where he's performing in the game. But I just think, one, the risk of him getting a red card, which happened in this game, oh well, very high in a game where you don't want to go man down. And then it feels like, to me, you're not putting guys in their most comfortable position. I think Kamar Lawrence is more comfortable in a four-man back. Clearly, Tim Parker and Aaron Long are successful in that. You put Murillo at right back, and then you can bring in another option to be on the ball in midfield or clog lanes in midfield if you're going to sit back defensively. The other weird part of this game, tactically, from Jesse Marsh, he only made two subs. Go on the road. You played this weekend in Orlando. You're on the road in Mexico. One, he was forced into because Alex Muyol came out with an injury. And then he brings on Derek Etienne in the 76th minute. What do you make of that? Is that not going for goals? Is that not trying to score? What do you make of that?
You have your best 11 players in the field, and you shouldn't make a sub just to make a sub. A lot of times you feel you need a tactical adjustment because a player is tired. But if you don't need to do either of those, then good for him that he believes in his players. He believes in his system enough to not have to make the adjustment.
He was able to rest guys this weekend a little bit against Orlando, playing that B team that we've seen be pretty successful already. It was just weird to me, especially when you've got Kaku on the bench, who's your big signing, and you've got Chakowski, who's been good so far, Bezicourt as well. It just seemed odd that in a moment like this, where you have long travel...
Who do you bring Kaku on for? Then let's actually play it out. Who do you bring him on for?
Yeah, I guess that's a tough question. I mean, once Collin gets the red card, it changes things completely.
Maybe you bring Kaku on instead of Etienne.
Yeah, that was in the 73rd minute. Wheel came out a little bit before that, and then New York gets the chance. BWP, a messy play. He ends up one-on-one with the keeper. He doesn't have a ton of time. He doesn't get his first touch. Great.
Say what you're going to say. Say the Patsy
the
line of the
guy?
Armchair guy.
The armchair guy who comes on the show sometimes. I can't remember his full name.
Matty D.
We'll say he doesn't score in big games. He scored against Tijuana on the road, which was a big game. This would have been a huge moment to score man down a road goal and go out 1-1, even lose 2-1 in the end. Would have been huge for Red Bulls, and BWP doesn't get the finish.
It's just such a ridiculous thing we talk about in sports, this idea of a big game player. It's a sample size. Players approach every game the same, and just because in your mind it's a big game. It's still a sports game, and there's a small sample size of six or seven of these. There's a six or seven game sample size of players don't score. If it comes at the wrong time, we give them this label, and this just makes me so mad. I articulated that poorly because you can hear the anger in my voice.
But you need to score goals in these big moments. That's your job.
It's your job to always score goals, and whether it's a big moment or not.
It's all about rings, baby. It's all about the rings.
So who's a better player, LeBron making 10 straight championships or Jordan for making six?
MJ. MJ's the greatest player of all time. Everyone knows that.
Then why didn't he make the finals in the other eight seasons?
Because he was playing baseball. Done. You've been debating.
Not all. He still played eight other basketball seasons.
1-0 loss in Chivas. We'll talk, obviously, next week. We'll preview this. Both games on Tuesday. Red Bulls, 8 p.m. Eastern time at home at what we think will be a favorable crowd for Chivas. Obviously not as bad as playing down in Guadalajara. And then 10 p.m. Eastern time next Tuesday, both on Go90 and UDN, Club America versus TFC. Did Red Bulls do enough here? Do you see them having enough to go into this second leg? Aurelien Collin will be suspended, as will Alex Mouil, both on yellow card accumulation. Amazingly, six other Red Bulls players who were sitting on yellow cards didn't get suspended. Do you see this Red Bull team having enough to get through?
Same answer. Absolutely. Did they do enough in that first leg? Yeah, now it's an even game. This is what you want and what you expect them to pull out. Here's my question to you.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's go back to Kaku. Do they play Kaku? Do they start him?
So Aurelien Collin's out. You would assume that means that they play a four-man backline because the other options are Fidel Escobar, who I don't think is even healthy enough, and I don't think they start him in this one. So now you're looking at an extra midfielder that you can bring in, probably a 4-2-3-1 for this team. You can push Sean Davis higher into that number 10 role and bring Shotkowski in next to Adams, or you could start Davis next to Adams and put Kaku in that number 10 role. I would do it.
Or you could shore up the midfield and do all the above. You could put Shotkowski next to Adams, Davis higher. You could put Kaku on the right with Mouil out, Royer on the left, yeah. DWP up top.
It seemed like Velo, he likes in that right midfield role. I like what Velo brings in that he keeps possession and he keeps the ball moving. He connects well with guys. You paid a lot of money for Kaku to be this guy. In the playoffs, in the last 3 years, we've said when they need to break teams down, they need to get goals late. No one is able to create things against the condensed defense. No one's able to take a defensive player out of the game with the dribble or with a pass to open things up. This seems like why you got him. And I understand it's early in the season, which is why it sucks.
Can you expect any young player from a different continent to do well in his first 2 months? Did you sign him? And I would think Jesse Marsh is smart enough to understand this. Do you sign him for anything he does in the first 2 months?
Well, clearly he's smart enough because he didn't play him in this game. So clearly he's proven right. That his expectations are later. But at what point do you go for it?
And go for
do you
it.
Have... And then I guess
have I not taught us anything on this show or said enough anything? You can go for it without having to play high-priced talent. You can go for it through something called a game plan.
Yeah, it's true. And if there's other things that you think you can get from the other players out there, if you think that you want to be more defensively solid, but Chivas wasn't dangerous in this game at home. They weren't dangerous in Seattle except for Roman Torres slipping on himself. They're not a great team, and they're not a super dangerous team offensively. So it seems odd to me to try and condense numbers and clog that midfield because you're probably going to have most of the possession if you want it. Now, that might not be what Jesse Marsh wants, and he wants to give the ball to Chivas so that he can press them and create chances out of that. We don't know. But what we do know is both teams have a shot, and all that matters is making history. Bobby, two teams that have an opportunity in the second leg. Do you see an MLS team in the final of CCL this year?
You know I despise prediction. Every time I'm on the show, you guys ask me for prediction. I despise prediction with all my heart. I'm not going to give you one, but can they both do it? Yes, and my gut tells me that one of them will.
I don't actually ask anyone for predictions except you because you despise them so much. That's my gift to you. It's going to be fun. We've got two second legs coming up next Tuesday, but we've got a full weekend of MLS action. It starts Friday night, Revs, Montreal. We've got three national TV games this week. LAFC, Atlanta get us started on Saturday, and then Orlando, Portland, and LA Galaxy, a.k.a. Zlatan, and Sporting KC on Sunday. We've got Paul Tenorio coming up in the next segment to preview those games as well as talk a little transfer rumors for the Chicago Fire.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime@mlssoccer.com. or tweet at Extra Time Radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
From throwing clothes across the floor. Back now on Extra Time Radio, driven by Continental. We've talked CCL, and now it's time to talk MLS, and who better to do it with? The national writer for MLSsoccer.com, Mr. Paul Tenorio. Paul, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me on.
We had you half on Monday because you were, I think, in the driver's seat while Sam Stasko was in the passenger seat doing his Extra Time Radio cameo. Did it sound as good on the other end as it did on this end?
No, because I was just hearing Sam's end, so it sounded worse, you know? But the best part was, like, I was following Waze to Sam's house and not the route that Sam wanted me to take. And so he was getting really frazzled as I was taking these other turns. And I think I got in his head, which is great. You know, I always like to mess with Sam's psyche whenever possible.
Paul, what do you think it says about you that you use Waze instead of Google Maps?
Wow.
It was a change that came about because, you know, I always, when I get in an Uber, I'm always like testing to see if they're taking the fastest route. And I was like very much a Google Maps guy. And then one day I got an Uber and he had Waze on and I pulled up my Google Maps and it said the route he was taking was 7 minutes faster than my route. And it was only like a 14-minute drive. So I was, that's a significant amount of time on a short drive. And it converted me. I switched over to Waze and I've never gone back.
That's how you get to the top of the game.
You know, sometimes when I'm on dates with girls and I saw that they got to the date using Apple Maps, I'm like, nah, I'm out of here.
Yeah.
Like, this
Apple
date's
Maps
over.
Is unacceptable. That's unacceptable.
Yeah.
This has all been fascinating. Let's talk a little bit transfers rumors, though. And I guess the biggest name going around right now, Paul, and one that could potentially end up in your city is Iker Casillas. There's reports coming out of Spain that he will sign in Major League Soccer this summer. The rumors have always been about him to the Chicago Fire, who could use a goalkeeper. Do you see anything happening here?
Look, I can confirm that there has been interest from the Fire going back to the start of this window regarding Iker Casillas. The question is going to come down to price. It would be a free transfer from everything I've read. And the salary would be the big question mark. Now, the Fire have a lot of cash to deal with. So even if Casillas wants to come on a TAM contract, that would be no problem for a team that traded more than $1 million for Akam. They got $1.2 million in allocation money for Akam. And they've got a good kind of savings of allocation outside of that move as well. So I'll be interested to see if they're able to agree to a deal, because when I had heard about the interest earlier in this window, I heard it could be quite reasonable price for Casillas, depending on kind of what you think reasonable is for a goalkeeper. That's probably where the negotiations would get hung up, if anywhere. I will say, and we weren't speaking to any specific players or positions yesterday, but I did go and interview Veljko Panovic for a story I'm working on, and he said that he does believe that they could add players before the end of this primary transfer window on May 1st. He does think it could happen. He didn't say it will happen, but it seems like they're trying to be aggressive to make it happen before May 1st. Maybe this Casillas thing is that link, because the rumors are coming up stronger and Sam and I are starting to hear more buzz that the Fire are back in the picture for him.
You guys, this dynamic duo, getting lunch, breaking rumors. It's a dream scenario. I'm sorry. I can't get over how exciting it is that Paul and Sam just hang out and crush Major League Soccer news. You're talking to Veljko Panovic. He's talking about moves because he has already said this week the team's just not good enough and they're not going to be there for a little while. We got a little bit from Sam on Monday, but what do you make of what's going on with this club and what the next few weeks or months look like?
Yeah, I mean, this is kind of exactly what I'm working on a story about. And I think it comes down to a couple areas. The first is obviously the transfer window. When you trade a guy like David Akam, who has such a big impact, not just in the goals and assists he brings to the field, but in changing how teams play you need to have replacements lined up. And I think the Fire were trying to be aggressive. The day of the draft when they made the trade, Nelson Rodriguez said they had three targets that they thought that they could get signed and finished. And none of those three has panned out. And that's a big miss for the Fire. And you've seen the fact that this is a team that's struggling to open opponents up because they don't have that vertical ability to stretch the field with pace. And that's been compounded by injuries. I mean, this team has struggled from the day one of preseason to get anything that looks like a full team on the field. Matt Polster and Brandon Vincent came back from national team camp banged up. Then Grant Lillard and Jonathan Campbell went down for injuries, and the back line was a total mess in trying to get any kind of continuity. The goalkeeper, Richard Sanchez, he was hurt in preseason and missed several weeks and didn't get back onto the training field until just a couple days before the opener. Luis Solignac is now out 6 to 8 weeks with an injury. You add in the injuries they knew that they had, Michael Deleu and Georgi Mihailovic. There are a lot of pieces missing for this Fire team. So when you don't add the pieces you thought you were going to add in the transfer window, and then you have injuries that make you lean on depth that you were hoping you could bring along slowly, the rookies that we've seen on the field, Elliot Collier and Diego Campos, Jan Vaquero, who hasn't played yet but has been in the 18, that's where I think you're starting to see the problems come to the surface. Now, when I talked to Dax yesterday, he goes, look, I'm a player. I'm not a coach or a GM. I can't worry about the transfer window. I can't worry about adding more players. We have enough on this roster to be competitive, and we need to eliminate the mistakes. 8 goals in 3 games, not good enough.
I love that answer.
An answer out of Bobby Warshaw's own heart there from Dax McCarty. Obviously a holding midfielder, so he has the right head on his shoulders in Bobby's book. Let's move a little bit farther north. Zlatan Ibrahimovic already in Major League Soccer, which means there's more enigmatic stars that everyone wants to come into MLS. Balotelli's one of the big rumors, but another one that gets me excited for a player who's fun to watch and does crazy things off the field is Hatem Ben Arfa. He's currently on the books with PSG, not getting a whole lot of playing time. And then, Paul, this week, some comments from Remy Gard, who said, yes, I know him well, and he's always welcome if he wants to come.
I mean, I don't think there's a more perfect fit for Ben Arfa than the Montreal Impact, right? I mean, they're kind of the Ben Arfa of MLS in a way, right? They're you know, enigmatic, and they've got all this potential, and when they play to that potential, they're quite good and fun to watch, and when they don't, they can be a disaster sometimes. I think it would be a good fit. I was talking to some people in MLS, and every time you bring up Ben Arfa's name, it's not like the first thing that's brought up is not the failures that he's had in his career. It's how good he was when he was playing his best soccer. And he's that type of player. You know, he's that type of player that I think every GM, every coach looks at and says, you know, what if he puts it together with us? And I think that's where Remy Gard is right now. I mean, when you talk about talent in MLS, if you bring that guy into this league and get him on the field playing even close to his potential, he can be a game-changing player in this league. So I'd be interested to see what the price would be. I think he would probably have some suitors in Europe, despite the fact that he hasn't played at PSG in like a year. But I don't know in today's MLS with TAM, is he worth a TAM deal? What's the right price point? Because this league is not really a part of the global market per se. And so, you know, $2 million salary in MLS is still significant, whereas in a lot of places in the rest of the world, it's not. You know, what is the right price point for a guy like that? I don't know the answer to that.
Now, obviously a guy that Remy Gard knows a little bit. If it wasn't someone like this, do you see Montreal being a club that's trying to make an addition of this size still in this transfer window?
Well, they have the ability to do it. They have a DP spot open. And, you know, I talked to Adam Braz a few weeks ago, and he said, look, we don't see a DP happening in our immediate future, but that doesn't mean that we're not open to it if the right player comes along. So they have that ability. He did say also we have a lot of TAM and GAM to spend. Now, they went and added some pieces in the few days after I talked to him. You know, they brought in two transfers in the ensuing days, both of which required TAM. So I don't know how much they have left, but I think they do have flexibility in Montreal, and I think they have a willingness and an owner who's willing to go in and make those big splashes.
Where we're at right now with the transfer window, what should fans be looking at? Where is MLS clubs standing in terms of the world market and how available players are to bring them in as we close out here in MLS?
Well, the challenge that teams face right now that want to get a deal done in this primary transfer window, which ends May 1st, is that they're looking overseas in Europe especially, and it's very difficult to get a transfer done because there are teams that are fighting to avoid relegation. There are teams that are fighting to earn promotion. There are teams trying to qualify for Europe. And so all of those teams are off the table right now when it comes to transfer agreements. They're not going to move any player because they're trying to hit those goals. Now, if you look at the mid-table teams that aren't going to play in Europe and are safe from relegation, those are teams you can deal with. Teams that are already, you know, very clearly going to go down, those are teams that are going to be looking to shed salary very soon. So I think a lot of MLS teams, if you have a target on those rosters, are starting to get really aggressive right now. But some GMs that I've spoken to who would have some players on their shopping list have said, hey, we're still probably a week or two or three away from those, some of those races being made a little bit more clear and those pathways being open to us. The other aspect of that is the World Cup. On an individual basis, if you're looking at a player who's in the picture for the national team, there might be some nervousness to transfer to an MLS side, to a new team, you know, go somewhere where they don't know if they're how quickly they'll get on the field or what the national team coach might think about a move like that just before the World Cup window. So those are the factors that teams are dealing with. But I think in the next couple weeks, you know, those clubs that we've talked about now for a few weeks needing to make a move, you know, the Atlantas of the world that we've kind of been waiting to see what defensive midfielder they add. I would expect as those windows become a little, as the window gets closer to ending and those races become a little more clear, that they're able to make a move.
Paul, I'll put you on the spot for you to be a GM or a decision maker. One team in Major League Soccer who absolutely needs to do something.
Chicago Fire.
Okay, give me a second. We already talked about them. Give me a second answer.
You know, for me, when I look at the rest of the league, I mean, this is another obvious one. I think Minnesota United is another team that needs to make a move. I mean, if we're talking about teams that have to do something to get competitive, those are the two obvious ones. But another one I think that would be to become a contender this year is Sporting Kansas City. We know that they've been searching for a number nine. At some point, they're going to have to find a guy and pull the trigger and spend the money. Because I think that this team is capable, if they have a consistent goal scorer up top, to win the Western Conference. And I know that's kind of crazy to say, because a few weeks back, I was looking at him and saying, you know, I don't know, maybe this is the year that the run finally ends. They're getting a little bit older. They haven't really changed things up a little bit, you know. But I think if they go get a nine, and I'm talking about a proven goal scorer that's going to cost you a couple million dollars, they're right in the mix in a Western Conference that is totally up for grabs right now.
I probably disagree with you on that, but we're going to talk about another time when you're not here to defend yourself. Here's my next. I'm going to ask.
Who's your team?
Listen, you're not the one asking questions here, Paulie. Okay. But here's the question that's going to transition to something else. David was going to give you a softball with it, but I'm going to tee you up.
Don't even know what I was going to ask.
Orlando, good or not good?
I mean, my humble opinion is that they have been not good to start this season.
All right, well.
But I also believe strongly that it's not been the team that they put together that's been on the field. So I wouldn't even say I was encouraged by the win against the Red Bulls, because there was a lot that went wrong there. But I'm not going to judge this team until I see them play two or three or four games in the 4-2-3-1 that I think that they built this roster to be this year.
With Ori Rosell.
I do think they're done with the diamond. I'm holding out judgment until I see, you know, that complete squad on the field. I think we'll finally see it this weekend for the first time.
Are you buying or selling your stock on them? Do you think it's a safe investment and it's going to rise? Or would you panic and get out now?
I guess I would buy. I would buy right now because it's at its absolute lowest point, you know? I don't think they're going to get worse than they've been.
He saves 7 minutes. He uses the correct maps. This is how you get to the top. Last little question for Orlando fans. Zlatko Unizovic, the captain of Werder Bremen, 31-year-old Austrian international. There was a German rumor that he was potentially going to come to MLS, named Orlando specifically. One, Can they even fit a player like this? And two, have you heard anything?
I mean, theoretically, they could. They would have to use Tam. They'd probably have to pull Tam forward from next year to buy down Sasha Kljestan to open a DP spot or to use the Tam on this move. But according to my sources, it is not true. Orlando City is not in the mix on this move. I don't know whether there are other MLS teams or not, whether it's just an agent trying to create some interest in a market for the player. But I can tell you unequivocally that Orlando City, as of today, is not in the mix for this player.
Paul Tenorio, this is why he's better than Sam Stastny.
Unequivocally better. Unequivocally.
This is why you put him in the driver's seat and Sam's in the passenger seat. Paul, thanks so much. We'll talk to you again next week.
All right, guys. I appreciate it. Thanks.
Paul Tenorio, the best in the game. So much fun to have him. We talked about Orlando. They'll play on national TV on Sunday at 4 p.m. Eastern time against Portland, Orlando. But, Bobby, the weekend starts on Friday night, the New England Revolution playing on Friday night at 7:30 p.m. Eastern time. And then on Saturday on ESPN, Atlanta hosting LAFC. Let's start with this. That one, 5 p.m. Eastern time on ESPN. Bobby, if you're LAFC, you're up 3-0. Because we haven't really talked about this side of it that much. You're up 3-0. You lose 4-3 at the Galaxy. Your first loss ever. Is there some mental block that they have to get over? How is Bob Bradley handling this week?
Well, to answer that question, I'm going to refer everyone to MLSsoccer.com, where I have a story coming out about this. How do you, because we think about the Galaxy coming back from 4-0, but on the other side of that was a team that failed when they were up 3-0. How do you come back from it? You basically twist the narrative. You remember the positives. You said, hey, we didn't lose 4-3. We were at one point up 3-0. We were a team that was good enough to be dominated and a very good contender. So that's how they'll twist it. That's how they come back. And then you kind of tell yourself, if we fix these things, then we are really a force to be reckoned with.
If they get a lead in this game, is there a worry?
Not yet.
About seeing it out, about protecting it?
No, not yet. If they have a lead in this game, I'm interested to see. The article basically highlights that three of the four goals that the Galaxy scored came from poor decision-making from the center midfielders. And I'm not saying a team needs to... We talk about this all the time in the show. Do you bunker it in? How do you go on the road and win? How do you hold a lead? I'm not saying you need to bunker in, but you just need to change your decision-making slightly. And on three of the four goals, obviously the fourth was the Zlatan volley. The other three, it was either a pass or a movement by one of the center midfielders that freed up a really dangerous zone for the Galaxy to hit. And at the top level, if you free up a space for Ola Kamara, Zlatan Ibrahimovic, Sebastian Lletget to attack, you're in trouble. And it's going to be the same even more so against Atlanta United. If Feilhaber and Marc-Anthony Kay vacate zones to try and get passes and the ball goes astray, Miguel Almiron will kill you down the middle in transition.
On the flip side for Atlanta, defensively, no Leandro Gonzalez Pires in this one. Jeff Lorentowicz going out of the last game with an injury. What does this team do at center back? What do they do defensively?
Center back's not that tough. They probably play Chris McCann next to Michael Parkhurst. And McCann looked good last weekend. He filled in well. Granted, it was supposed to be three and he was going to be protected. The bigger question is, what do you think they do at defensive midfield?
I have no idea at this point. I mean, you've got young players that can play. We saw Andrew Wheeler-Aminu make his debut in the last game. You've got Chris Gosselin in this team as well. You've got Miles Robinson available in this team as well. Tata Martino doesn't seem to be excited about playing guys like that. He seems to be leaning on the Chris McCanns and Kevin Kratz of the world over that to try and just sneak by enough so that his attacking front can get him points.
This is another thing I wrote about. It's actually, for as good and as complicated as that LAFC team is, that defensive midfield job is actually fairly simple. Just stand there. You have five other attackers in front of you with Nagby, Vialba, Martinez, Gressel, Almiron, who can do the attacking. You just stay and protect the center backs. You just make sure that you, Parkhurst, and whether it's Kratz, Robinson, McCann, whoever, that you three are very protected.
I'd be interested to see if he pulls Gressel in a little bit and plays him in that central midfield role. Potentially. He's been versatile for him. He's played farther, more attacking in central midfield, but He's shown that he can kind of play anywhere right now at this point under Tata.
Either way, it should be a very fun game. Two teams who have shown a willingness to let the game open up, to try and play, to press, to
counter. Might have the inability to close the game down.
Seriously.
And so let this one fly on the turf. It's going to be fun, of course, at Mercedes-Benz, where the crowd has been so good. And then we move to those national TV games on Sunday. We mentioned Orlando-Portland. This is the last game of this Portland away stand to start the season. And then 9 p.m. Eastern time, LA Galaxy, Sporting KC. Bobby, you heard Paul Tenorio there say, Sporting KC, potentially a good center forward away from being a contender to win the West. The Galaxy, they gave up 3 goals. They were not great against LAFC. Zlatan saved them. One, how many minutes do we think Zlatan's even going to be able to play out there? And then two, is this an opportunity for Sporting KC to get that attack going?
I first want to disagree with Paul's assessment that you need to sign a big money attacker for that team. They're leading the league in goals. It doesn't have to come from one person. I mean, for example, who has the most goals on that team?
Johnny Russell?
No, Felipe Gutierrez.
Oh, yeah, Felipe.
Who's scoring from midfield.
Yeah.
Right? If all of a sudden, if you're getting more goals from wide.
But is Felipe going to score 32 goals this year?
You don't need him to score 32. You need him to score. I mean, what do you just have to think about it. You need your team to score a certain amount, and if that's split up amongst different players, maybe instead of your forward getting 17 and your attacking mid getting 8, maybe it's 12 and 12.
So now that's from a numbers point of view. Let's look at a system point of view.
Well, this is the point. That's where, okay, continue.
No, so is there a guy that can play in that position who either does enough to get defenses focused on him or sets up those guys around him well enough?
I don't have – yes. The answer is yes. The answer is I'm not sure. But the answer is yes, David. Shallowy can do that job. Kyrie Shelton can do that job. My concern is, do you need both? And that's where the point of Quazette, right? He was supposed to be the other guy in that team where you really only need one guy who is industrious and opens up spaces. So I'm talking myself out of this. I was so convinced they could do it. The more we talk about it, yeah, maybe they do need to replace one of those two. Yeah, now I'm concerned.
And real quick, what do you expect to see from the Galaxy? Do you expect heavy changes structurally or mentality-wise because they gave up 3 goals in a half or 3 goals in 50 minutes, whatever it was?
I would argue that 2 of those goals Bingham should have had.
Do you see a change in goal coming?
I don't see a change in goal. I would expect Bingham to just not. That chip from Vela was nice. But, dude, just backpedal and stick up your hand. That ball floated in at the pace that you pitch a slow-pitch softball. There's no excuse a top-level goalkeeper shouldn't have been able to get his footwork right and jumped and gotten that. That floated from 25 yards.
Well, in 1 week on FS1 or on Fox, Zlatan put on a show. Will he do this week? 9 p.m. Eastern time, Sunday on FS1. And then Saturday, after the LAFC Atlanta game, you've got a bulk of MLS games between 7 p.m. and 9:30 p.m. Eastern time. Bobby, you've got Philly, San Jose, FC Dallas, Colorado, Chicago Fire, Crew SC, and RSL Vancouver. Which of these games are you most interested? Which of these teams are you most interested in trying to figure something out about them this week?
The title of this weekend, David, I'm making it the Are They Good Weekend. Some weekends you usually say, yeah, that team's good, that team's bad, or this is exciting with these two good teams. But I would say almost every single one of these matchups, it's a team fighting to prove something. It's a team fighting to prove that they belong. RSL Vancouver, two teams that we expect more from RSL. Vancouver outperforming expectations. I go through the whole list about how these matchups are teams that are on the verge of us coming on ETR and saying, dang, maybe they are good. I'm most excited for Philadelphia San Jose because I like the way both those teams play. I like the way they try and keep the ball on the ground. They like to keep it fast. So I just enjoy watching those teams. What's your game?
Of this weekend, outside of the national TV games, it's got to be Chicago Crew SC. Because you've got the potential that Crew SC could go off in that game. And I think it's a road game that's a must win at this point.
Who has more talent between those two teams? This is when we talk about the Chicago Fire needing to sign someone new. And then you go to Dax's quote about how we have the players.
They don't have the same players that Columbus does.
Columbus has better players?
You don't think so?
I'm not positive. Would you take a midfield 3 of Schweinsteiger, Chiani, Dax, or Trapp, Arthur, Higuain? Maybe Columbus, but it's close.
It's a tough question.
Would you rather Katai or Pedro Santos?
Yeah, you're making a very solid point right now. I think the back line for Columbus.
Would you rather Polster, Vincent, or Awful, Milton? That's a bad – to say awful Milton doesn't ring well, but you get the point.
Valenzuela. Awful Valenzuela.
You get my general point.
Yeah, no. Man for man, there isn't a huge difference.
And listen,
right,
it's
now
Paul's job to come on the show and talk about signings and Tam and Gam and all these things. And it's my job on the show to say you have an obligation that once you get guys into your club, once you get guys into the training field, to do the right thing by them.
Now, when you're in a team, let's say this Chicago Fire scenario. I'm sure you experienced similar things with F.E. Dallas. We're in the offseason. There was an expectation that a big player was coming in to play at a position. Does it change the way the manager prepares the team? As if, basically, is Velco going in and building a team in preseason where there's the idea that we're going to play this way because we're going to get this sort of effect from left midfield from X player because I don't know who it is, and then it hurts you when you go in and you don't have that player?
Yeah, certainly. And you're trying to... Yeah, throughout preseason, you're trying to build a philosophy, and that philosophy is predicated on something that's going to come. You don't get it. It hurts you. But this is ultimately why we have technical directors and managers, and there's all these safety valves to have backup plans. And this is what the best – I mean, look at Jesse Marsh. Look at Greg Vanney. These guys have two or three options for everything, and maybe it takes a year to build, but Valco is in his third year. He should have been able to build on top of these things.
And we have to say Greg Berhalter lost Justin Miram and Giassi's and – Ola Kamara and has done the same this
midway
year.
Through preseason.
Yeah, no. So a manager has had that problems and is doing well. It's going to be a fun weekend starting off on Friday night. New England Revolution, Montreal Impact at 7:30 p.m. Eastern time, and then the three.
Are
national
they good?
TV
you know,
games.
Both two teams have won lately. Are they good? Keep that's on. A, let's keep it going. I'm going to keep going. With
that's this. A very good one. FC Dallas, Colorado Rapids. Are they good? We're on the verge right now of wondering is Colorado going to be one of the more exciting teams offensively to watch this season.
No,
they're scoring
not.
Goals right
no,
now.
No, not. Stop.
They scored five goals in
Stop.
The last two games or Stop. Four goals.
Stemming from excellent defense. And it's not to say you're
built
really
off their excellent defense.
But I would say that the first two goals, that Philly game that they won last week in 3-0 was almost a wash because it was a set piece. It was a weird, weird bounce. And at that point, Philadelphia's chasing the game. So I'm not using that as sample size for their attack. But their defense has looked excellent. And maybe if they stifle teams, this is what they do. They get set piece and weird goals.
RSL Vancouver finish off the Are They Good Saturday and then Sunday, 4 p.m. Eastern time on ESPN. Orlando hosting the Portland Timbers and 9 p.m. Eastern time on FS1. LA Galaxy and Sporting KC. Coming up, the mailbag with Mr. Ben Bear.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Paper boy, always about that paper boy. If you ain't on your grind, then you flexing, use a hater boy. Paper boy, always getting
back
paper
now on Extra Time Radio, driven by Continental on MLSsoccer.com. David Goss, Bobby Warshaw, and now we've got the legend in the room, Ben the Research Bear. Ben, thanks for stopping by. It's like an episode of Seinfeld where you just wander in.
I'm here on a Thursday. This is weird. Usually I'm not even in the office on Thursdays. It's my day off. So
are you in because Andrew Wiebe's watching his baby?
No, I'm in because I am going to a wedding in Milwaukee this weekend, so I'm not working this weekend.
Whoa.
I'll be, of course, tuning into all the MLS action while I'm at the wedding.
Dream scenario.
I mean, wedding, MLS.
Milwaukee.
Milwaukee's a don't. Yeah. We have a – who's our usual text person who texts
in? We do have someone who texts from Milwaukee and makes fun of us.
So if you want to text into the line, maybe, I don't know, someone – one of my friends is talking about watching the Manchester Derby, and I'm like,
"Do you have a soccer
nah.
bar in Milwaukee that you go to?"
I never spent time in Milwaukee really.
Because you went to Madison.
I went to Madison,
which is also in Wisconsin.
But an hour and 15 minutes away.
Nailed it.
But if you want to text into the text line, there's a very small chance I watched the Manchester Derby somewhere.
Because you're a huge Premier League fan.
Well, my friend from college is a Manchester United.
Is it the one getting married?
No.
Because you have to go if it's the one getting married.
No, it's not him. I've got him. He lives in Chicago.
Yeah.
I've gotten him onto the Chicago Fire. He went to a couple games last year. I sent them a couple hats, him and his soon-to-be wife. Well, already wife because they already got married.
He could
but
be an Iker
they're,
Casillas
they're now huge
fan.
Fire fans. Yeah.
Yeah.
Casillas is definitely another name for them to get excited
Something
about.
To get excited about. I will be in Boston this weekend. EMLS Cup will be happening. You can follow it on MLSsoccer.com. You can watch the finals on Twitch. ton of coverage there. The first one ever in MLS history. Very exciting stuff going on. Before we get into the mailbag, I have to ask you guys one quick question. Are you going to read Bruce Arena's book?
I'll probably read his book only because I read almost every soccer book because it's our job, but I'm going to do it out of a lot of hate and spite.
That's our job? That's news to me.
Bobby's the literary reviewer at Major League Soccer.
I mean, I guess when you write a soccer book, you have to
read
them.
Know the feel.
I mean, I've read a few soccer books, including Bobby's. So shout out to Bobby, who's sitting right here. No, I'm not reading that book.
Is it frustrating? You're mad that they didn't qualify or that they didn't qualify and then he wrote a book?
My only answer to that is I'm surprised that he's doing this because Bruce still has some semblance of being a hero in some strange way. And all of a sudden he's just bringing us all back into it. Nothing he says is going to be constructive, right? Yeah. The other reason I'm not excited to read the book is having done the book and understand what you use for your – what you send out to media and what you use for your excerpt is the best part of your book. And if that's the best part, like, we already knew that.
So
that was not news to anyone about how they tried to fire Klinsmann for a year.
Right. So this was the news that came out that was released by Stephen Goff is that in the group stage of CONCACAF qualifying in 2016 before Copa America Centenario – Bruce Arena had met with Sunil Gulati about replacing Klinsmann. Mm-hmm. He was supposed to meet with Dan Hunt immediately after.
Dan Flynn.
Dan Flynn, sorry. Dan Flynn then had a heart transplant. Yeah. Couldn't talk for a little while. Klinsmann turned things around a bit.
Went to the semifinals of Copa America.
Right.
And it would have been
got
tough.
Got through the group stage into the hex. And then the final two results, of course, lost to Mexico, lost to Costa Rica, and then Bruce Arena did take over.
But the big thing about the story is that they ended up not firing Klinsmann because Dan Flynn went in for heart surgery.
Yeah.
And Sunil didn't want to make the decision on his own. But how does that make sense? How does it
because
make sense?
Because there wasn't a soccer person to make that decision. There wasn't a person whose job it was outside
role.
Of Sunil. His pure role was to handle the senior national team.
But why couldn't Dan Flynn have made this decision? I get that you have heart surgery, but why couldn't Dan Flynn just send a text and said yes? Like, if you knew what you're going to do.
I mean, it's kind of a big decision. You want to have a talk. You want to have a conversation. You want to have a conversation with the
new
guy,
even
though you knew
him, obviously. I mean, this is gossipy, but does this smell right? Does any part of this about how the
none of this is just – this is all just
– it just doesn't smell right.
I mean, all this – the way he's presented himself publicly since the U.S. were eliminated from the World Cup is, to me, just a shocking lack of self-awareness all around.
He was on the Portugal game
the first game. I mean, I was going nuts with everyone else. It's really just not a good look. And then he's going to release his book 2 days before the World Cup.
Yeah, June 12th is the release date.
I mean, shout out to the publishers. Like, they know how to really rile people up. But, like, you're not going to endear yourself to U.S. national team fans by doing this. You're going to continue digging that grave for yourself. You know, we look at him. He's the all-time best MLS coach of all time, obviously. Took the 2002 World Cup team to the quarterfinals. But he's digging. He's creating this narrative. Not creating. He's continuing this narrative that he probably shouldn't want to continue.
And
about how he was the head of a team that ultimate failure.
And he said
for the U.S.
You mentioned that tack that he's taken, that he wouldn't change anything. The decision to take over. I don't know, maybe the tactics specifically. Apparently, the book goes through his whole life, starting on Long Island, going all the way through UVA and DC United, LA Galaxy.
Yeah, but
all of that.
You're releasing it 2 days before the World Cup. There's a reason he's releasing it then, because he wants people to read the part about the U.S.
It's all about the sales, baby. It's all about the sales. Another little U.S. soccer tidbit. There's a rumor that we will be invited to play at Copa America in 2019 down in Brazil. It would be a Gold Cup year as well, so you'd have what you had in 2007, which was potentially split rosters, an A team going to one and a B team going to another. Let's get back into that CCL fever, though, because
The B team would probably be going to Copa America, according to Grant Wall, by the way.
And that's what he says because
– of course, there's no head coach. I don't know how anybody's making that decision
right
now.
Like, why we're talking about this is so
– so let's talk about this.
What kind of report is that?
The mythical Toronto Duck sends in and says, can I get a comment on TFC's
depth? Can we go back to this one more time? What happens if we hire Bielsa and we're like, hey, Bielsa, I want you to send your A team. Sorry, I'm just so mad that we're having these two conversations.
Okay, so the one piece of this is that because we don't play in CONMEBOL, you can't require teams to release their players for Copa America to play for the U.S. So that's the idea.
You almost have to take a B team.
That's the idea, is that teams, because they won't be forced to, won't release their players, and you'd rather get them once that summer than none. So you'd bring them to the Gold Cup. You would like to think you could massage those teams and say one tournament or the other, what does it matter? But I think that's part of the reasoning behind it. Do you want to stick on this, Bobby? Are
no,
you ready
please,
to move on?
Please.
Can we get a comment on TSC's depth? 3-1 win without Vasquez, Mavinga, Morrow, and Haglin. And then he says, if I tell you why I'm the Duck, can I get a T-shirt? Because someone was asking last week. What do you make of this TFC squad, though, Ben?
First of all, I don't think we want to know why he's called himself Duck. I think it's all about the mystery.
Maybe.
To me.
We'll call him Pato from now on.
Look, but this is what we talked about, you know, since the beginning of last year, basically, is how deep they are, and they only added that to that depth. You look at a guy like Agar Akeche, they're out those three players out, Vasquez. I mean, particularly for him, Vasquez was out. Doesn't even see the field in this one.
Yeah.
I mean, he was their big signing this offseason. He's a guy who has a lot of pedigree coming from Athletic Bilbao. Can't even see the field for this team because they have 20 players who can get out there and play against Club America.
Perry in Portland, I think TFC
Can I answer that one? Can I get my two cents on that? Because I'm passionate.
You got
I'm,
to talk about TFC for 15
I'm
minutes.
I just want to say all the credit goes – it's true they're deep. So much credit to Greg Vanney, because how many of those guys would you put on Montreal or New England or some of these teams and we said, they should have replaced. All of a sudden, they're on a club that does things right with an organization that believes in these kinds of players, and here we're saying, wow, what depth.
And I did make that point in my article on MLSsoccer.com yesterday. You know, when you look at a guy like Marco Delgado, we've talked about him a lot on this podcast. You know, some people have been blamed for not putting him on 24 to 24, even though that's not really a decision that was made by one person or one small group of people. But he's obviously turning into one of the stars of this team and going to be a U.S. national team player going forward.
Bobby throwing a little shade on Montreal, New England. That makes that Friday Are They Good game really exciting
it's
in
unfair,
Bobby's book.
Unfair, new managers, but traditional organizations.
Perry in Portland, I think TFC may have needed one more goal in that game, but still glad they got the win. Bradley did not play his best game, gave the ball away too much, but if he plays like we've seen in the past, then they're going to make it to the final. Next game at the Azteca will be a 3-2 with TFC going through on away goals. That mention, though, Michael Bradley stepping up, chipping Memo Ochoa in the Azteca in their last game there. I mean, Bradley's 100% going to score in this game, right?
I mean, yeah. I'll be there. So
Ben will be there?
Ben
shirt
will be
off
there.
In the upper deck?
No, Ben. I don't know where I'm sitting yet. But I will be there. It should be very exciting. Bradley, he's not doing that again.
If he does, then
he
you got to take
though,
your shirt off in the upper deck.
I will take my shirt off. If he does
run
exact
to the upper
same,
deck. You got to run the
exact
stairs.
Same thing. I will run up. You'll see me. I'll be sure to wave down the UDN cameras.
You will be heaving in the altitude and the pollution at Azteca. Ben doing the stairs. 1966 all over again. Nathan and Trenton, TFC, just cooking stuff up in the laboratory. A reference to, of course, Jozy Altidore's famous speech. Hashtag CCL fever. Ben, you're also kind of a Red Bulls guy here. Mm-hmm. How'd you feel about that performance in Guadalajara?
It was a fine performance. I mean, when I listened to Jesse's presser after the game last night, I listened to it this morning, I was mostly in agreement with him. I mean, it was a pretty even game, in my opinion. I don't think either team really created any chances by themselves. There was one good chance of both sides. Chivas finished it. Red Bulls didn't. BWP didn't finish the chance. He has to finish that.
Yep.
That was the biggest chance of the match by far, according to expected goals by Opta. So it was that it really came down to two chances. One team finished, one team didn't.
We're excited to see what happens in the second leg. Let's move on. It's a long one. It's got a couple stages. Let's start out. Hello, team. This one coming from George in Queens. I want to discuss a few things. First, Goss mentioned his girlfriend bought him a projector that he uses to watch the games. I'm currently looking for a projector for the exact same reason. I did not say that. My girlfriend bought a projector and I watch games on it. I sent her this message because I was asking her for production advice, and she pointed out immediately that that is not why she bought that projector, and I agree with her.
She bought the projector for other reasons. Yeah, for herself.
I can say this. I don't really love watching games on it. I feel like you can't see as well because it's a little bit pixel and it's like a huge picture. It's hard to intake, but I think the one she got is called Next Gadget if you're looking for that. Next up, Ben Olsen has to go. While the new acquisitions have made the team much more entertaining, I do not think Olsen's done nearly enough in his 8 years at helm to keep the job. The team always looks like they don't have a clue what the game plan is. Olsen's failed to establish an identity. There is also a former DC United coach sitting on his couch, unemployed at the moment. Bobby, do you know who I'm talking about?
I'm just choosing not to participate in this.
Even though his pride is hurt because of the U.S. failure of not getting the World Cup, Bruce Arena is still proven and the best American coach. I know he made mistakes with Omar Gonzalez and Jeff Cameron and stuff like that, but you can understand why that he has trust in those guys. Anyway, I think it's time for Olsen to go and Bruce to come back to DC United. Do we got any love for that?
Considering what we just talked about, no.
Yeah, it didn't sound like it. His other thing is sticking with DC United. Chris Durkin's playing really well. He's looked like a pro at 18 years old in just his few minutes. So I have a trade to put out there. Chris Durkin to ATL for Tam and Gam. Not sure how much, and maybe some picks.
What?
How do you like that dream scenario?
Why would DC do this?
It's not a bad idea.
You like
how
it?
How much Tam and Gam?
It's not a good
DC
idea.
Has like
how much
four
Tam and Gam?
Good young central
how
midfielders.
How much Tam and Gam?
How much does he cost?
Oh, how much you're asking me? You're not asking the caller?
The caller? What
Georgian
caller?
Queens.
Georgian Queens.
We could go to Queens.
I know go to Queens right now and do this again.
I know a really good deli out there.
One good deli?
Queens. Yeah, one good deli.
Somewhere between six and a million.
That's
so
it?
Like,
that's the same thing. If you sold him for a million, you'd be getting the same amount.
Darlington, Nagby, Justin
Muir. Maybe you sell him,
number?
But that's another option. But I also don't hate the idea of, from what I hear, Durkin is particularly happy in D.C. right now either.
Yeah. They've got Jared Jeffrey.
Is it or is?
Is not.
Sorry.
They've got Harks, Jeffrey, Moreno, and Durkin. So there's kind of a log jam.
They have what name of the three you
Segura,
just said?
Segura, I think.
They have Segura, too. They have Moreno.
Yeah.
They've got Canals.
Yeah,
they've got Harks. Jeffrey's five.
Yeah, I meant
list.
To say Canals, not Jeffrey. My bad. Yeah, so it's kind of a log jam for a young player to try and get minutes there. Obviously, the results haven't been great as well. He then goes on to say, by the way, this is all Georgian Queens. This is an essay. That he's excited because New York has two good teams in MLS. He's a Knicks fan, so he's used to New York not having good sports teams. Shout out to that. I appreciate that. He proceeds to compliment New York, both Red Bulls and NYCFC, and ends with, should Jesse Marsh be U.S. M&T coach, which we will discuss another time.
Can Bobby just give us like a sentence or two of what he thinks about what Olsen has done so far and what he needs to do to continue to have his job? Because he had a bad season last year.
Bobby.
There's going to be more expectations this year with Audi Field coming online. What does Ben Olsen need to accomplish over the next 10 or so games?
I don't like talking about this because you guys know how I feel about Ben. My favorite
yes,
player growing
up. That's why I'm forcing you to answer the question.
Yeah, but he's not done the job that he should be doing. And it's not even from wins and losses because they've had weird circumstances over the last couple of years. But just when you watch that team, they don't seem to be well drilled in anything.
Yeah. Which is what the George is saying is they don't have an identity. And they haven't really ever had one except that they're scrappy.
Yeah. They have an identity that just don't generally seem to be very good at that identity either.
Well,
we're well drilled in that identity.
We will see what happens. It's going to be a great weekend, as I said. LAFC going into Atlanta to start it off.
Shout
on
out to Francisco
TV.
Calvo.
Francisco Calvo, although Minnesota not playing this weekend. And then plenty of good games Saturday night. Two national TV games on Sunday. Bobby Warshaw and Ben Bear, my two DPs. I'm putting them in places to win. Andrew Ruby will be back next week. CCL Fever, MLS Recap. Thanks so much for listening on MLSsoccer.com.